KDXU News Time 836. It's time for the Pathway Hospice and Palliative Care Show. We call it the Elder Care Show. There's Richard and Kaylee.
It is another fabulous Wellness Wednesday, and this is Elder Care Radio. Thank you, Andy.
Welcome back, by the way.
Yeah. Hey, welcome back.
Thank you. I'm alive and kicking. Actually, I feel great. I feel fantastic.
So, that is spectacular. So we hope that this show brings to you our best in healthcare information and specifically directed to those who are elderly or those that love somebody who is elderly. And we really hope that this is good information. So that's why we're here today. And I'm Richard, and this is my lovely wife, Kaylee, and we are Pathway Hospice and Palliative Care. And I'm going to get this in early. Our phone number is, and this is an easy one, 435-477-6999. I think we'll have, I hope we have some calls today because we're going to be talking about some things that should be of interest and hopefully people want a little more information.
And I guess we should say up front, if anybody hears anything that piques an interest and you do want the site references or any of the information to be emailed to you, we are happy to do that. So feel free to give our office a call, and we will forward all of the site references that we discussed today.
So it looks like it's time for another episode of COVID Good News. With all the media coverage about the new Delta variant and super spreaders and, you know, the vaccine isn't as effective as we expected. If you've been, just so you know, if you've been vaccinated, you can still get sick and you can be, and you can infect others. And that may seem very scary. So we're hoping that we can provide kind of a little normalcy, a little middle of the road reasonableness, so that we kind of overcome the extremism that you find in the media. You know, you hear a whole lot of noise on both sides, but really the truth usually is somewhere in the middle. So we're hoping to cover that a little bit today.
We're hoping to be able to calm some of the anxiety and fears that seem to be out there so prevalent.
All right, so let's review what we already know before we move on. First, and this has always been true, we know it and the CDC confirms it, washing your hands often with soap and water for 20 seconds is the first best way to reduce the spread of viruses and all other bugs and things that can be transmitted in the world. Okay?
And what's funny about that is I've said it before, in the intake packet that we are required to provide, by according to Medicare standards, the clean hands is one of the disclosures that is not recommended, but required by Medicare. And that has been for probably 25 years. That is a required disclosure. And that hasn't changed. Clean hands and, you know, making sure that you, if you touch something, if you're working with a patient, that you wash your hands before and after, will scave off a lot of the germs and infections, and that hasn't changed.
They teach it in kindergarten and every class after that.
Right.
They have signs in every bathroom. It is important to wash
every
your hands.
Restaurant, right.
So that is still important. We don't want, and it is the most effective way to address this. The second best way to address this, and again, this is stuff we already know, but isn't being promoted out there on the airwaves,
well,
so we may not notice it.
We know it, but with all the, oh, use the hand sanitizer and do this and do that, that doesn't seem like the one. But even on the CDC website, the number one is washing your hands. It's not pour alcohol on your hands. The number one is wash your hands. That hasn't changed.
Soap and water. All right, so number two, and this one is very important and gets a whole lot less coverage than it should, and that is, if you are sick, stay home. Okay? Now, we all know that. That's pretty important. So the most important thing if you're sick is get yourself better. So stay home, rest, recover, all of that makes sense.
That, too, has not changed. What was it like when you were a parent of young children and somebody would drop their kid off at your house with a runny nose and you'd think, why didn't you keep him home? I mean, that has not changed. In school, kids coming to school that are sick, you see every year my kids, you know, were going to school even before COVID. You would get notices, this is flu season, this is, you know, the time when if your kids have fever or runny nose, keep them home. You hear it at work, if you're sick, stay home. That isn't new, so it also shouldn't be scary.
All right, and then the other one that we hear a lot about, and that is that if you, you know, if you're not going to be home and you're out in public, social distance. And if you can't social distance, wear a mask. In that order, social distance, and if you can't social distance, wear a mask. That those are reasonable things, and that's still out there, and so we should all understand that. All right, but that's not really what matters today. We just wanted to recover that. What's important is that there's a lot of new news, relevant news, newsworthy news out there, and we just wanted to bring that forward. Now, we don't want to go really deep, you know, deep dive into the details because that can get a little boring. If you're interested in that, we will give you the access to the studies that were done that are published on the NIH's website. That's National Institute of Health. We'll give you all the information so you can do your own reading. The studies are pretty exciting, but let's talk about the not good news for the moment, and that is if you didn't know, the vaccine probably will not make a difference whether or not you can contract COVID-19. The studies have shown that even people who've been vaccinated can contract that disease. The good news on that is if you've been vaccinated, the likelihood is that your sickness will be less intense. Andy, do you have any comment on that?
I actually agree 100%. I feel like I was surprised that I got COVID because I was vaccinated. But when I got it, I really feel like it could have been much, much worse had I not had the vaccine. In fact, most of the time was the old mandated that you can't come to work, do work from home kind of problem. I had maybe two or three lousy days, and then I was good.
Right. So the vaccine seems to help reduce the symptoms drastically, which is all very good. So if you've been vaccinated, that is a positive on that, and you should hold on to that and be happy with it. Mm-hmm. All right. But we also have found there's been some studies that show that the vaccine becomes less effective over time. There was just a study done recently that says that the Pfizer vaccine was 76% effective earlier this year, and now it's probably only 42% effective. And the Moderna vaccine didn't drop as much. It started out at 86 and is now down to 76%. But the design of the vaccine really is intended to be short-term anyway when it affects our RNA, not our DNA. There's a lot of data in that if you really are excited about it. But for everybody, just know that the vaccine does reduce symptoms, at least for a while. And that's why they're talking about booster shots. They're talking about, well, yes, once people start taking these booster shots, then we'll be able to maintain a level of reduction in symptoms. But you're just as likely to catch the disease, even if you have.
And anyone who has watched the news probably realizes by now that there have already been variants, and there will be variants that come up from here till the end of time, because this type of virus does change. It adapts. And so booster shots are going to be the norm with, you know, this COVID.
Yeah.
That's just
with this new strain of disease that's out there. It's going to mutate just like the flu does. And so we're going to see changes over time. And
are we almost done with the bad part?
Well, yeah, we're pretty close. just want you to know that that study that talked about the reduction in effectiveness was a 50,000-person study in a few different Mayo clinics throughout the Midwest. And so, there is some real data behind that. So another little bit of bad news, the Delta variant seems to be more transmissible by some measure. And again, when we start talking about these things, sometimes it is all about the minutiae. You know, if somebody can say, hey, this is more powerful, you know, you've seen that on, you know, laundry detergent, more powerful. Well, how much more? Well, almost not perceptible, but we're going to measure it anyway. So they say now that the new strain of COVID is about as, you know, transmissible as chickenpox. And I know that, you know, when I was a kid, you actually had to hang out with somebody for quite a while to get that chickenpox. And that was the plan.
And sometimes you came home and your parents were sad you didn't get it.
Yeah. So you had to go back, you know, so if that's the transmissibility, I think that's a reasonable thing for everybody to understand. Okay. Some other things. Back at the beginning of the pandemic, I was kind of surprised. And maybe you remember, the doctors seemed to be told, you know, there's nothing to be done other than wait until somebody has an issue where they need a ventilator. And that was
no
surprising to me.
No treatments in your home. Prior to being really, really bad and going to the hospital, there really weren't treatments at home. But
right
now there are.
Well, the advice that you got was, if you're sick, stay home, and if you get so sick that you can't breathe, then go to the hospital and get on a ventilator. That was a standard, and that was kind of surprising to me. There were no treatments, but things are changing. The other part of it is vaccines are only prophylactic. Certainly, if you get the vaccine before you are infected, then you have a chance of, as we know now, reducing the effect of it. But at the point that you are infected, the vaccine probably isn't, if you take it then, the vaccine probably isn't going to change anything for you. So if we take the vaccine and it reduces our symptoms later, that's great. But there's good news for everybody, and that's the part that we're really excited about. Here's the good news. There have been plenty of studies and reviews of data now, and there are now options that have come down to reducing this disease for those who are and are not vaccinated. And that is the good news for the unvaccinated. If you can't be vaccinated and you do contract the coronavirus, there are medical protocols that will reduce your symptoms.
And that is really good news.
Right, because those symptoms are, of course, feeling sick and being contagious, but also the fact that, you know, there is a possibility that you could pass away. Now, we know that historically this disease has a 99.75% recovery rate, but if you're in the 0.25% that didn't recover, that statistic doesn't matter to you. But as we reduce that 0.25% even further, so much the better. So that's good for those who haven't been vaccinated, but for everybody who has been vaccinated, the same good news. If you contract it and you've been vaccinated, your symptoms will probably be less. If you contract it and you've been vaccinated and you go on this protocol, your time will be shorter, your symptoms will be less, your recovery will be faster, you'll be less contagious sooner. So it's all good news. One of the studies that we're talking about was published in the American Journal of Therapeutics. And I'm just going to read the conclusionary statement. There's two parts.
It was the June edition. And again, feel free to give our office a call. We're happy to email you any of the links that for which we are discussing today. None of this is opinion. It's all purely fact-based right off of medical websites. And scientific websites, health science websites, I should be clear.
Right. So the meta-analysis, based on 18 randomized controlled treatment trials of ivermectin in COVID-19, have found large, statistically significant reductions in mortality, time to clinical recovery, and time to viral clearance. That is the clearest way that they can say that part of it with a whole lot of words in it.
And then here's my interjection. Do not go to your farm and feed store, buy ivermectin for a horse, and think that you can prescribe it to yourself in, you know, just a slightly smaller dose. We're talking about horses, 1,500-pound horses, right, that a single dose is supposed to, you know, clear them of parasites and what have you. Make sure you use a doctor to prescribe in the correct dose so that you don't have any complications. But again, all of this is published on a health science website, and we're happy to send you the links. It talks about dosages. It talks about prescriptions. So you can find the information you're looking for.
Right. All right. And then the second part of this conclusion, which is good, furthermore, results from numerous controlled prophylaxis trials. Prophylaxis trials are those things that are designed to prevent, okay? So prophylactic, prophylaxis, that's all preventative. So furthermore, the results from numerous controlled prophylaxis trials report significantly reduced risks of contracting COVID-19 with the regular use of ivermectin. Finally, the many examples of ivermectin distribution campaigns leading to rapid population-wide decreases in morbidity and mortality indicate that an oral agent effective in all phases of COVID has been identified. I want to read that one again for you. Furthermore, results from numerous controlled prophylaxis studies report significantly reduced risks of contracting COVID with the regular use of ivermectin. Finally, the many examples of ivermectin distribution campaigns leading to rapid population-wide decreases in mortality and morbidity indicate that that an oral agent effective in all phases of COVID-19 has been identified. So for those of you who have been vaccinated, this adds to your pool of resources to make this disease less important. Yeah, less scary in your life. And for those that can't be vaccinated or haven't been vaccinated, you have another option available to you now.
I guess what we're trying to say is, since this new disease is going to be a part of our everyday life forever, it's not going to completely go away, let's deal with it. Again, as being your own best medical advocate, if you know how to deal with it, you should be able to deal with it in a way that does not make you lock yourself in your homes and fear living. Let's find ways that we can go back to normal and live life and enjoy and be happy and enjoy time with our family.
And if you're now sitting there saying, well, ivermectin's been around for 40 years and, you know, there were doctors who were recommending it, but everybody said no. And you think that that was some, you know, grand plan to hurt people. The reality is that the medical community, as a general rule, doesn't make broad stroke recommendations until they are absolutely tested and vetted and guaranteed. Because in the past, there have been decisions that have been made and recommendations that ended up not being good. So the medical community is normally very conservative in making these recommendations. Now, ivermectin has been shown in past studies all the way back to 2012 that it has a positive effect on viruses like HIV and Zika and a bunch of other ones. So there was a belief, a reasonable expectation that it might have some good impact on this virus also. But it hadn't been tested. It hadn't been proven. So there wasn't the recommendation. So now those tests are out there. The recommendations can be made. So our recommendation is talk to your doctor. You need to have a doctor involved in this because everybody's different. For the same reason that some people can't be vaccinated, there may be a reason that ivermectin might be not a good option for you. So talk to your doctor. They know you. They have your medical history. They have some knowledge and information. Go to them. Ask some questions. Now, this is new information. They may not have it. If you want a copy of the study to give it to your doctor, we're more than happy to provide that for you. But the first question that you probably should ask, you know, start with this question. It's a pretty simple one. If I contract COVID, would you prescribe ivermectin as soon as possible to help me reduce my symptoms, help me recover faster, and reduce the possibility of spreading the virus sooner? That's a reasonable question, and give them a chance to explain where they're at. Okay. Now, the other thing the study pointed out is in other countries that didn't have the vaccine, they were prescribing ivermectin as a prophylactic, as a protection against getting the virus. And the studies show that it actually did have an effect. And so the next question that we should probably ask the doctor is, would you recommend that I take ivermectin to help prevent me getting it at all? That's a question to ask them and have them talk to you and help you through that. Do you have to set an appointment? I don't know. You might be able to email. If you've got some communication with your doctor, you may be able to email them those questions and they may be able to respond to you.
This is all part of being your own best medical advocate.
Yeah, we are. Kaylee and I are always going to be that advocate, that you be involved and have a knowledgeable involvement in your own medical care to help you help the doctor provide better care for you. So that's always going to be our stand, and that's why we're going to make these recommendations. Engage your doctor in this conversation so that we can move on and that we can reduce this fear-mongering and everybody, you know, running around in absolute terror that there's this new monster in town when, in fact, it's now just an inconvenience maybe.
Well,
and that may be a little too strong of a word.
We've had lots of diseases, right? Always have. I mean, flu season comes out and there's national warnings on the news that if you're immune compromised, stay at home. We've always known that you can wear masks in public. Before it wasn't common, but now it's very acceptable. So just make sure you advocate for yourself, but don't stop living. What we never really talk about and what we can't find a lot of studies on is the damage caused to people who live in their homes isolated in fear. We know that there's been a substantial increase in death rate and suicide rates, but they're really being careful not to tie that to this disease. So let's just get out and live. Get some fresh air, spend time with family. Just protect yourself, and there are means to do that.
That is a good point. You know, chronic fear leads to chronic
illness.
Chronic illness. We are raising our blood pressure through stress. We are causing inflammation throughout our systems, and we know that that's not good. So if we can dial down the fear so that we can dial back on all the other things, then we will be healthier. If you are willing to grab a hold of that fear and suppress it down and start living where you're active. And we know that being active, actually physical activity, is a great way to extend life and gain more benefit. When we are sedentary, and we've heard this from a lot of different sources, but in the aged, it is at least as true. If we're sedentary, if we're just sitting in, you know, alone in a room all day, all night, our bodies start to fall apart quickly. If we are out and being active, socially active, physically active, mentally active, those activities will lead to a better outcome overall.
Spend time with your grandparents. Either go visit them at their home or invite them to come visit at your home. But let's not let this disease keep us from spending time with our senior friends and loved ones, family. There's far more damage that comes when we segregate and isolate and we fear something that we can control. So let's take control of our own best health.
So here's our action plan. First, wash your hands often. We know that. If you are sick, stay home. Don't infect others. If you are sick with COVID, the sooner you get an ivermectin regimen, the faster you recover and the less sick you will get. If you are out in public, don't go around kissing strangers from other states. In fact, don't go around kissing strangers in general. social distance. If you can't social distance, wear a mask. And most important, don't get caught up in the hyperbole and embrace the knowledge so that we can eliminate the fear. Forewarned is forearmed. If you know someone that needs to get this information, tell them. And encourage them to listen to the Elder Care Radio every Wednesday at 8:30 on KDXU.
Or encourage them to give our office a call. We're happy to forward this information to any of you. Anybody that wants the additional information, give our office a call. Pathway Hospice and Palliative Care. We are changing the face of hospice with an emphasis on palliative care in Southern Utah. Our telephone number is 435-477-6999. Again, 435-477-6999. And wrap it up, Richard.
And we'd like to say that we will be at the St. George Senior Center tomorrow, and we look forward to seeing people there. And if you haven't come out to the Senior Center before and want to see what it's like, we'll introduce you to some people that can give you a tour. But come see us. We'd love to talk to you. If you have any questions about anything, about healthcare, about resources available in the community,
help in your home.
Yeah.
There's a lot of help available in your home, and it's free of charge, covered by Medicare. You've been paying for it since you were 12 years old and started working.
Right. So give a call to the easiest number in the world, local area code, and then it's 4. That's the middle number on the left, lower number twice. That's 477. And on the right, it's the middle number and the lower number again, 6999. If you want to find any specific resources about the community that are appropriate for the elderly, let us know. We'll try and put you in touch with those. It has been great talking to you today, and we look forward to talking to you next week.
Have a great week, everybody.